Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of those here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is always, the world-traveled Drea Kaufman. Or at least Canada-traveled.
Yeah, at least Canada.
Which, I've never been to Canada, which is so weird.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I really want to go, though, because, you know, now I live up in the Northwest, and it's just right there, so.
You're like... maybe, what, 2 hours from the border?
No, it's farther than that, because Seattle is three.
Oh, because you're southern. Southern.
And so I think it's probably like 4.5 or so, maybe 5. I'd never actually, you know.
So I could get to Disneyland, and you could get to Canada in the same amount of time.
Yeah, one of them is known as the happiest place on earth, and the other is Canada.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
Just kidding, Canada. I'm just kidding. I mean, come on. Who hasn't seen pictures of, like, you know, the beauty of Vancouver or Banff or any of those amazing places?
Who doesn't love anything made by the Sci-Fi Channel?
Exactly.
It's all made
in
Canada.
Who doesn't like, you know, maple syrup, you know, the real stuff? So come on, Canada.
Okay,
that's the deal.
So hilarious and unrelated story that if you do go to Canada and you're traveling through one of the Canadian airports, there is a duty-free shop between the U.S. and Canada, right? The idea being, like, you can buy things that they won't charge
you. But
you
can't go to the bathroom there.
Oh, ha. So they won't, like, charge you taxes. Like, they won't charge you the Canadian taxes there. And if it's under a certain dollar amount, you don't have to, like, claim. So we bought, like, a t-shirt without taxes.
Oh,
like,
nice.
You know, like, small
like,
stuff like that.
Rebel!
They sell everything. But, yeah, right? Screw the man! But so one of the parts of this duty-free shop was an entire wall of maple syrup.
Mm.
Like, an entire wall full of these super fancy containers and every form of maple syrup you've ever known. Which is hilarious because I don't like maple syrup. So I'm just like, that's a whole wall of stuff I hate.
Mm, well.
But yeah, it's and they're all in maple leaf shaped jars.
Oh, that makes
which
sense.
Which makes it just extra Canadian. It makes me laugh every time.
Man, did they apologize to you for not liking it? And they're like, I'm so sorry you don't like it, you know?
No, but I had someone cut me off in traffic.
Oh, really?
And
then they called you and apologized?
No, we had a friend of ours in the car who's Canadian, and everyone's window was a little bit down, and I was like, I thought Canadians were supposed to be nice, and the guy turned around and looked at me and was like, oh no, gave me this like, oh, I'm sorry face, and she's like, that's okay, some of us are still jerks.
That's great.
But it was so, yeah, it was an interesting trip. Everyone's accent made me chuckle a little.
Yeah, well.
They all did say things like, I'm sorry, and oh, it's all about that.
Yeah. So. Having lived in Minnesota, I ran into a lot of people who had an accent very similar to that. So, yeah.
The North Dakotan and the Canadian accents are very similar.
Well, sorry that we just derailed the entire podcast.
Sorry, we just went that way, y'all.
Yeah. Welcome to Canada Post. I'm your host here, Matthew Rushing. And you are on the right station.
We're about to get started.
Yeah, Owl Post it is. And so if you want to check out all things Owl Post, make sure you hit us up over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. We are doing quite well there, Drea. I was just looking at the numbers again today, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who listens to Owl Post. You guys have made this a huge show. We really appreciate it. Help more people find the show. It's been so cool to see people find the show throughout its run. And what I love about the show is this is honestly one that you can go back and listen to anytime that you're reading the books. And you could be rereading the books. You could just have picked up one of them and listened through with us. So really, this is a show that is something that you can listen to anytime. So, you know, if you like it, hit us up with a star rating review over on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you're listening, wherever you're getting your podcast. Make sure you're following us at Join Nerd Party over on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We've got the website at thenerdparty.com. And if you'd like to send us an email, Dre and I love getting emails from people about things. So hit us up over there on thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Outpost, and that comes to Dre and I. And, you know, again, I just was talking to... was just talking on Twitter about, I don't know, probably like 3 or 4 days ago, somebody had messaged at Join Nerd Party with the hashtag Outpost and how much they love the show. And they wanted to know if it was safe for their kid who had read the books. So, you know, and I said, you know, it's pretty family friendly for the most part. We try to keep it that way because, you know, what we're talking about is Harry Potter and that's for the whole family. So, yeah.
Just don't listen to our outtakes where we go on and on and on. We just don't post those. And then yes. They're safe. And it's safe
exactly.
for children.
Exactly. So we never post our outtakes. But, you know, this is, it's funny that I just mentioned it being family friendly because, you know, I think the place that we're at in the Goblet of Fire is probably the darkest this series has been. You know, I think book two and the things we got into there, especially with the Chamber of Secrets, got really dark. But obviously, we've just had the death of Cedric. We've had the return of Voldemort with the darkest magic we've seen yet. And now we get to chapter 34 with Prior Incantatum. And Harry is being forced to duel with Voldemort. And I feel so bad. And she does such a great job of writing Harry here where he is realizing that this is probably it. This is probably where he's going to die. And he's like thinking to himself, yeah, I've learned how to duel, but school, nothing prepared me for this. Expelliarmus is not going to save my life here. At least that's what he thinks. And it's just, he's like, even if I can deprive him of his wand, what good is that going to do when I'm surrounded by Death Eaters? And you just, she does such a great job of writing this character and the portrayal of him throughout this small chapter. It's a very small chapter, but his going from how could I win to being somebody who's I'm gonna die on my feet is really nice writing, I think, for the character. And again, like I read this on my iPad. It's like five pages on my iPad. So it's a very short chapter, but I feel like she packs in some great character development for the character of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting the little tidbits we get here that we'll learn more about later on in the book, because obviously Harry survives the chapter, because otherwise that's the end of the series, and that was a complete letdown. So
what?
So he lives through the end of the chapter. Shocker, everyone. She really painted what's happening as this sort of beautiful, odd, Harry doesn't know what's going on, Voldemort's face kind of tells you the same moment, but for him to be able to, the fact that he can even consider fighting the Imperius Curse, like, and be able to shout back at Voldemort something that he's not asking him to do, is kind of incredible. And for him to muster up that, I love that he draws his want to stand up and die as he wants to be like his father. Like he wants to die standing and fighting the way his dad did. Like the fact that that's his thought is just, it's a beautiful thought, right? He never knew his parents, but to have such a strong desire to be like them is remarkable. And this part in the movie, for the most part, mirrors pretty closely. But for some reason in the book, it was just, the only word I can think of to describe it is beautiful. It's just this beautifully written and strong feeling of emotion that's not like, you're not in peril, you're kind of confused. And it just has this really beautiful, almost weirdly calming feeling to it. Like he's just accepted that this is what's going to happen and he's going to do everything he can, even though he knows he's likely to lose. it's a very freeing and beautiful way to take this chapter recording and on the last chapter, how Cedric died or two chapters ago. Yeah, everyone, thank you. Two chapters ago. That Cedric died in a very uncharacteristic way and that he just kind of died and that was the end of it. And this is kind of the same. He just knows he's going to die and has this very calming acceptance of it, which was not common in books or even movies at the time, that they're just going to do what they can and kind of go in with acceptance. That's just not a common sort of heroic feeling. So it was a beautiful chapter in a eerie, creepy way.
Yeah, I think the beauty of what Harry goes through here is there's a resignation that of where he is. You know, his mother's not here to save him. Nobody's going to be able to help him. And there becomes this, I feel like you're right. There's this almost calming sense that comes over him that I could only think of as the idea of determination. He is determined to not be beaten by Voldemort. And he will, you know, he refuses to bow the knee until Voldemort makes him bow. You know, he refuses to try and show him the pain that he's in with the Cruciatus curse. And then, of course, like you said, he fights the Imperius curse and shouts that he won't. And so there is and then not only that, but then there's this part of Harry that comes out where, you know, he's able to escape this moment because of his quick reflexes from Quidditch, so that he gets behind the headstone. And it's in that moment where he truly realizes the last thing I want to do is to die here curled up behind a headstone. I will die on my feet like my father. And like you said, there's that beautiful moment, because I think that emotion of him making that decision and then the connection of him seeing his father for the first time in his life, coming back as he does with the Prior Incantatum.
Priori Incantatum. There's an I on the end. It's really hard to say, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, forgive me for saying it wrong. So, there's a real beauty in that, though, that connects. And there's that sense that you even get in that moment, too, that he has made his parents proud. He has made his father proud. And so I found myself getting quite emotional reading that scene when it happens, because it is, like you said, there's a real beauty to it. In all of this desolation, there is a real beauty to that. And especially since the moment that it happens, when their wands connect, you know, Harry, this is where I felt like the movie did a good job. And just this one moment is when Daniel Radcliffe gives that determined face and he comes out behind the headstone. That moment was perfect. The rest of it's not quite as perfect, because I really liked the fact that their wands connecting bring them out of the graveyard onto like a hill. So it's away from this graveyard. And then what erupts out of Voldemort's wand at the beginning is the Phoenix song that gives Harry.
I thought that made it so beautiful.
Yes.
When I read that, I was so disappointed that they did not include that in the movie, because it would have been so impactful and so easy to do, to take the fighting noise out and to leave that as like the minor track and have this beautiful Phoenix song playing while these, like, I love that dynamic of this beautiful calming and what Harry describes it as, it inspired hope. Mm-hmm. It brought him hope, this song of hope, while he's watching the dead people kind of come out, and as he's fighting and everyone's kind of confused and the Death Eaters are shouting, like, all of that parallel, that dichotomy is just so beautiful. And I would have loved to have seen that. So logistically, the same basic things happen in this part of the book as in the movie, but it just has a definite different feel in the book. It has this, like, it's very magical.
Yes.
Like whimsical versus, like, two anime characters going at each other, right? Like, very anime-like in the movies, and this has this very whimsy to it.
Well, and the beauty of it is that with what's happening, you know, obviously she names it here in the chapter, but Harry doesn't realize what's actually happening and connect it with the name until Dumbledore explains it to him in the next chapter. But, or it might be even the next chapter after that. But that's beside the point. The point is that what we're getting here is the reversal of all the people that Dumbledore's killed.
The last thing he actually kills mm-hmm. is Cedric. And then we go back from there to the groundskeeper that mm-hmm. Harry thought was just a dream and is confirmed is actually something he saw happen. And then Bertha Jorgens, who we forgot about again until kind of this moment. We're like, oh, yeah, he killed her. And then we kind of keep going back through these nameless people that he killed. And then we get to Harry's mother. And we see Harry's mm-hmm. mother. And then she tells him to wait because his father's not far behind and hang in there. And then Harry's father comes through. The first thing you actually see come out of his wand, though, creepily, is the hand from Wormtail. Mm-hmm. It's just the hand that he, like, killed.
Yeah, which is super creepy.
So creepy.
Yes. So I love this moment. You hear the song of the phoenix. And he hears what's amazing then is that we know Harry's wand has a phoenix tail in it as a core. So there's a beauty in that is resonating here. And that so them both having these phoenix cores, you hear this beautiful song. And, you know, obviously, you know, for Harry, this is a sound that he always connects with Dumbledore. And he experiences this he feels like almost this friend whispering in his ear saying, don't break the connection. And so Harry is fighting so hard, and that's where we get the moment where things began to appear out of Voldemort's wand. First Cedric, then the old man, then you get Bertha Jorkins. And I love how each of them is, you know, really, they become cheerleaders for Harry, like, you know, don't let him win, don't give in. And then of course his father comes, and there is this moment, and again, I was reading this and I had a very emotional response to his father being there and coming out, giving him the encouragement that he needs, telling him what to do with the portkey and saying, get away. And then, of course, you have the moment there, too, which is even worse, of Cedric saying, will you take my body back to my parents? And it's like this, so it's so emotional here for Harry, but he doesn't even really get to experience it much because the moment the connection is broken, he has to dash back to the area where the graves are, grab his body, and then pull the cup to him so that they can escape. And that's it. Like, that's the chapter. But it's just there's so much emotion held in those few little moments. I think it's just it's incredible. It's such a well written, very tiny chapter, but it means so much for the character, who he is, and just for the saga in general. There's a lot going on here that won't truly be explained even by the end of this book. Which is, it's fun. I love how good she is at that.
I agree. And I love that this whole thing is happening. And as a rule, we expect Harry to not know what's happening and what things are normal and what things aren't normal, right? Just like us as readers don't have any sort of like education or background in these things. So for this to happen in this golden sphere to embody them, we're very confused, don't know what's happening. And so, you know, Harry's feeling the same way. But as readers, we turn and see that Voldemort also seems to have no idea what's happening. And all the Death Eaters seem to have no idea what's happening. And that to you as a reader goes, oh, okay, this is different. This is special. This is unique. And nobody knows what's happening or why it's happening. So, you know, it's kind of nice too that this happening to everyone in the chapter and not just Harry, because normally it's happening kind of to just Harry or just mm-hmm. Harry and Hermione. So it's another moment where we're kind of left with more questions than answers, as to like WTF just happened to us, everyone.
And I agree with you. I love the moment
of Voldemort just kind of losing it. Then he, you know, he loses all the cool of being cool and saying, you know, get your butts over there, take him out, get, you know, and I love that he loses all sense of decorum of, yes, I want to beat him by myself, you know? And in this moment where he completely has his world upended, where he thinks it's going to be an easy win, it's kind of, there's just a real beauty in that again. And part of that comes to this whole point of him not understanding what's really happening. You know, this is another moment where he's right. missed magic that he shouldn't have missed. He should know this, but he doesn't because he puts too much stock in himself. And I really appreciate that she continues to use that and to kind of beat this drum. I think it's something that's actually really special.
I do love that Voldemort's undoing is almost always exclusively just himself. I love it. I love that his ego is literally the thing that keeps him from succeeding every time. Like, every time. I love that because it's ridiculous and totally true and something that totally relates and is a great lesson. Like, humility is key. Like, they easily could have ended Harry, like, oh, I don't know, half a paragraph mm-hmm. into the chapter, as quickly as they ended Cedric, but he wanted to play with him and boast and brag and ended up, you know, losing.
Yeah, I think there's a real lesson to be learned here, and it's one that I think is something that's greatly important in our world today, is like to not think better of yourself than you should, you know, and you really get that here where you have Voldemort, who is so full of himself. Like, he's just so full of himself. Yes. Yeah. And I really like that she, you know, as these books go on, she continues to do that in different areas. She really shows the way in which people become so attached to what they think they know and forget that they might not know it all, that it ruins who they are in many ways. Like, it ruins their plans, and it ruins, like, and so there's this real sense that she's trying to, and this is what we'll get to at the very, very end, but humility. Like, you need to learn humility. Humility is probably the best thing that you can have as a person. And I really appreciate that. I think it's something I wish more books and more people really wrote about, but I think she does a good job of making that work. So
short chapter, but a really, really beautiful and sort of powerful one in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I 100% agree. So I'm excited. You know, I say that a lot, but, you know, where we are in the series, I think is just, it's such a great place to be. There's so much that's going to happen, and I can't wait to finish out this book and dive into the next one. There's just, it's oh my gosh. I'm having a hard time containing, because I really am super excited about this. So, Drea, if anybody wants to, you know, catch up with you about whatever's going on in your life, Harry Potter or otherwise, where can people find you?
You can come and check out my Canadian travels and tell me all about how much I should love maple syrup on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me over on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I am here on the network, also with John Mills on a show called Aggressive Negotiations. We're talking all about Star Wars each and every week. You can also find me over on the Track of M Network. I'm doing a couple shows there. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The next is the 602 Club, which is our general geek show where we talk about all of the fandoms we love, including Harry Potter, where we've covered all the movies. In fact, Drea was on a bunch of those shows with me, and honestly, can't wait to be covering Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald with her in just a few weeks. I mean, it's just around the corner, so make sure that you are checking. I've been feeling like that for, I keep seeing things come out about it, like posters and stuff like that, and I'm like, yeah! So I am very excited.
You fangirl.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with fangirling. Love fangirling. And so the last show you can check me out on is Cinema Stories, where I'm talking with my good friend Courtney all about films, but through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.